Asi mitambo iyi yave
kuita. Tinotenda ndini jonga kande miri.
Thank you, Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, July 11th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
ZANU-PF Member of Parliament Munyaradzi Kereke has been found guilty of raping a minor.
We did our best and we were not disappointed that we got to this stage, and our efforts have been rewarded. I don't think we have so much to complain.
Arrested Tajamuka Sesijikile campaign member Promise Mkwananzi is granted bail.
Zimbabweans are urged to take part in mass protest this week.
Let's close everywhere. The whole country. Let's close Bulawayo, close Mutare, Gweru, Gwanda, Vic Falls, Chinoy, Karoi, Arusape, Bindura, Kariba, Kadoma, Chegutu, Kwekwe. Just close. Remember, no violence.
And the MDC led by Morgan Tsvangirai says Police Commissioner General Augustine Chuhuri should step down.
The level of police brutality that we recently witnessed after the highly successful stay away is shocking. And it is the kind of brutality that is reminiscent, actually, of the Ian Smith colonial regime.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
ZANU-PF legislator for Bigita West Munyaradzi Kereke will spend the next 10 years in jail after he was today found guilty by a Harare magistrate of raping a minor child. At the same time, Tajamuka Sesijikile spokesperson Promise Mkwananzi, who's facing charges of destroying goods in Vice President Pelekezela Mpoko's supermarket, has been granted bail. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Harare magistrate Noam Peiwa found Kereke guilty of rape in one count in which he used a gun to threaten a minor child when raping her, and absolved him on a second charge of allegedly indecently assaulting another minor. The magistrate said although Kereke was allegedly being shielded by suspended Prosecutor General Johannes Tomana to evade justice, as submitted by the prosecution led by Charles Warara, the court was not satisfied that Kereke acted unlawfully in that respect, as he was not responsible for the prosecution of accused persons. Magistrate Mpeiwa had sentenced Kereke to 14 years in prison, but suspended 4 years on condition of good behavior. He added that he was lenient on the legislator because he has 3 wives and 17 children who look up to him for their survival. Mpeiwa added that the court had mercy on him because he previously served government in the capacity of advisor to the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe governor. Prosecutor Warara said he was happy with the court's verdict.
We did our best and we were not disappointed that we got to this stage, and our efforts have been rewarded. I don't think we have so much to complain. Yes, we may not have expected an acquittal on the first count, but still we think that it is explained, and we are not really fussy about it.
The conviction of Kereke means that there will be by-election in Bigita West to fill the vacancy that has been created by his conviction and subsequent jailing. In another court case, Promise Mkwananzi, the spokesperson of the youth outfit calling itself Tajamuka Sesijikile, was granted $300 bail today by Harare magistrate Tendai Mawe. The state accuses Mkwananzi of allegedly destroying groceries in Vice President Pelekezela Mpoko's Chopi's supermarket in downtown Harare after Mkwananzi is said to have led a group of youth to the shop protesting against Mpoko's continued stay at a local hotel on taxpayers' expense. Mkwananzi's attorney, Trust Maanda of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, confirmed Magistrate Mawe's ruling.
The prosecutor called the investigating officer to give evidence as to why Mr. Mkwananzi was not supposed to be released on bail. He gave his evidence, but after the evidence, the magistrate said there was no compelling reason at all why Mr. Mkwananzi would not be released on bail.
Meanwhile, the leader of the newly formed Viva Zimbabwe political party, Essi Lumumba, who recently dropped an F word on President Robert Mugabe, was granted $300 bail on forgery charges. The state accuses the former ZANU-PF activist of forging his signature on the registration book of a vehicle that he sold. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Meanwhile, a Bulawayo magistrate has granted bail to some local people who were arrested in the wake of protests during last week's stairway amid reports that police continue to arrest more citizens in connection with the demonstrations. Our reporter Taura Ishava has more details from Bulawayo.
One of the lawyers, Tanaka Mganyi, co-representing 85 people who are facing charges of public violence, told Studio 7 that the accused were given bail of $80 each. Mganyi said it is unfortunate that the court had set what he described as a high bail, stating that the accused are innocent and most of them are unemployed poor people.
Bail was set at $80 for each individual, which is about $6,800 that needs to be paid by these innocent, unemployed accused persons. So it's going to be a very difficult process probably to raise the money.
An additional three of the accused, who are juveniles, were granted free bail. Mganyi decried the fact that the juveniles had been put in custody together with adults and said it is important for police to be familiar with statutes that protect the rights of juveniles in cases of their arrest. Indications are that police in Rulawayo continue to pick up more people in connection with last week's disturbances. On Saturday, 22 people appeared in court facing the same charges of public violence. Among them were 15 juveniles. They are accused of breaking into a supermarket in Mzilikazi and looting some goods. Elsewhere, MDCT Vice President Tokozani Kupe says the women's wing of the party will stage demonstrations across the country starting this coming Saturday in Bulawayo. Kupe told Studio 7 over the phone that the demonstration is dubbed Beat the Pots campaign.
When children are hungry at home, they call on their mother. As we speak right now, there is no food in our homes. So the women are saying, we have got pots which are supposed to be cooking food, but there is no food to cook in those pots. So the women have decided to do a Beat the Pot campaign where they are going to be demonstrating against the hunger and poverty to say enough is enough.
Cooper refuted claims that a party wants to ride on the wave of protests that occurred across the country last week, adding that the MDCT was the first to engage in peaceful public protests. She also dismissed as nonsensical government's assertion that there are external forces fomenting the revolts in Zimbabwe.
Hunger is in our homes. There is hunger here in Zimbabwe, and it has absolutely nothing to do with the dead hand. Hunger is in here, and the people of Zimbabwe are saying the Mugabe government is the one which has made them hungry.
Last week, Zimbabweans across the country heeded calls to stay away from work, with some engaging in protests that turned violent in a number of places. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taura Ishava.
Still on the same issue, Zimbabwe is getting for another shutdown this Wednesday and Thursday, with activists urging workers to stay home and businesses to remain closed. One of the campaigners, Pastor Ivan Mawarire, says Zimbabweans should unite again this week and show the ruling elite that they are fed up and calling time on the ZANU-PF government. Mr. Mawarire, who says he survived an abduction attempt last week, says he's disgusted by the brutality that the police exacted on people who took part in the stairway last week. And for that reason and the failure by government to meet the demands of fighting corruption and fixing the economy that he spelled out last week, he says people should defy all intimidation and shut down again this week. This is what he said in his Facebook pitch today.
Fellow citizens, you have seen the video going around of the police beating people. As citizens of Zimbabwe, we refuse to live in a Zimbabwe like that. Because of that, and because of your failure to meet our demands, on Wednesday the 13th and Thursday the 14th of July, we are shutting Zimbabwe down again. You beat people like that. It's not right. And we cannot allow that to carry on. Citizens, on Wednesday the 13th and 14th of July, I know that it sounds heavy, but you and I refuse. Businesses, I know that you are losing money, but let me ask you, how do you justify? Schools, we urge you to close. Families, stay indoors. Don't go anywhere. This, what's happening in this country, needs you and me. You and me are the ones that are suffering. Let's close everywhere. The whole country. Let's close Bulawayo, close Mutare, Gweru, Gwanda, Vic Falls, Chinoy, Karoi, Rusape, Bindura, Kariba, Kadoma, Chegutu, Kwekwe. Just close. Remember, no violence. Don't destroy each other's property. Just stay at home. Finish. Remember, pray for Zimbabwe. Hear me. If you and I don't stand up, nothing will change in this country. They must listen to us. 13 and 14. Citizens, join me. Let's make history and make this government change.
That was Pastor Ivan Mawarire speaking in a video posted on Facebook today.
The government is threatening to shut down social media, accusing activists of spreading malicious messages about the ZANU-PF government. For Perspective, reporter Ntungamili Nkomo speaks to communications and media expert Zenzele Ndebele.
We should be prepared for anything because the Zambian government is so desperate to cling in power that they are capable of doing anything. So it won't surprise me if the government blocks or regulates social media because they did block it on Wednesday. So these are the people who are realizing that the people of Zimbabwe are now fed up with what they are doing, and they will go to any extent to make sure that they minimize communication between the people, amongst the people. But to them, I can only say, if they are really good at it, why would they fail to catch Baba Joshua when he was at his peak? So it means that someone knows something. And we really not be surprised if the government shuts down internet or blocks WhatsApp.
And what's the public sentiment on the ground? People are really prepared for another shutdown on Wednesday?
The way it happens this time is that it happens, people receive communications on their phone. And there is no rally that is called to say there's a stairway, there's no meeting, there's no poster that you can see. So sometimes it gets difficult to gauge the mood of the people. But the fact that the government is taking it serious, we know that events are being cancelled. We know that we can see the presence of the police. If you go to Rose Temple today, you'll find a huge number of riot police that are there, that are stationed. In every corner in town, you'll see three or four riot police in riot gear walking around. So the government is trying by all means to make sure that this time around it's not coordinated.
That was communications and media expert Zenzele Ndebele on the line with reporter Ntungamili Nkomo. There was no immediate government reaction on the threats to shut down social media.
And in Bulawayo tonight, a family is in mourning after a one-year-old child allegedly died from tear gas complications after the tear gas was thrown at the Aburombo flats home by police during protests last Wednesday. Kupakwashe Mutasa died while being transported to hospital on Thursday by his father, David Mutasa. The child was buried at Luveve Cemetery yesterday. Home Affairs Minister Ignatius Chombo told Studio 7 they are investigating the incident.
At the same time, the opposition MDC, led by Morgan Tsvangirai, says Police Commissioner General Augustine Chihuri should resign for what the party says are gross human rights violations being allegedly committed by the police on innocent civilians protesting against the current harsh economic environment in the country. The call comes following the surfacing of photos and videos, some very hard to look at or watch, showing arrested protesters being assaulted by the police while in detention.
In one instance, a woman wails as she's being assaulted by police under her feet. Another protester is forced to carry what looks like a heavy stone on his head amid police laughter. MDCT spokesperson Obet Gutu tells Studio 7's Junga Kandemiri the police commissioner should step down for allowing police to abuse citizens. He says his party will make sure that Chihuri and other top police officers are brought before parliament to explain the alleged police brutality.
The Zimbabwe Republic Police is supposed to be the national police force of the country. And, of course, in terms of the constitution of Zimbabwe, which is the supreme law of the land, the ZRP should always conduct itself as a professional police force that dutifully respects the fundamental human rights of all citizens, including even the rights of people in custody, the rights of suspects, and the rights of accused persons. And we as the MDC, we are saying that the level of police brutality that we recently witnessed after the highly successful stay away that was staged last week, a few days ago, is shocking. And it is the kind of brutality that is reminiscent, actually, of the racist Ian Smith colonial regime.
Are you going to take any action against the Zimbabwe Republic Police?
Definitely, yes. There are several options that we have already activated. The first option, obviously, is the parliamentary option, where we are already arranging and making the necessary consultations with our members of parliament in the National Assembly to ensure that Commissioner General of the ZRP, Augustine Chiwuri, together with the entire top brass of the Zimbabwe Republic Police Force, should be summoned to appear before the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. And in the Senate, there is the Thematic Committee on Human Rights. It is also going to call upon Commissioner Chiwuri and the top brass of the ZRP to appear before that committee to answer the questions that I've already raised.
And that was Obet Gutu, spokesperson of the MDCT, speaking with Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri.
Coming up,
handy hints on how to tackle HIV/AIDS.
And Zimbabwe's rugby team is in serious trouble.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
British Prime Minister David Cameron said he will officially resign on Wednesday, allowing Interior Minister Theresa May to become the country's next leader.
Presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton will be joined by Democratic rival and Senator Bernie Sanders at a campaign rally Tuesday in the northeastern city of Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
The United States finds itself beginning a new week today after enduring a week of violence. Two police shootings of African-American men at point-blank range in Louisiana and Minnesota, and the shooting deaths of five police officers in Dallas, Texas, at what was a peaceful demonstration against alleged police brutality.
And South Sudanese President Salva Kiir has ordered a halt to days of fighting between government and rebel forces that has killed at least 150 people and raised the fears the country is sinking back into civil war.
People living with HIV/AIDS have been urged to adhere to their medications to avoid opportunistic diseases associated with the virus, which can be fatal. Stanford Chimuti Munzeve, an AIDS activist who attended the 2016 AIDS Clinical Trials Group conference held in Washington recently, says research findings published during the conference suggest that putting people on antiretroviral drugs early, despite their CD4 count, is effective in tackling the disease. Chimuti Munzeve was honored for the work he has been doing in his community at the Washington meeting. He tells us more about this and ways of handling HIV/AIDS.
We have issues of comorbidities associated with being HIV positive, like tuberculosis, which is one of the leading killer in people living with HIV. We also have some inflammatory conditions that are happening in people who are taking antiretroviral therapy, leading to diseases of the liver and the heart. Cardiovascular diseases are also leading to the various strokes that we are seeing being reported in some of our hospitals. So those are some of the issues that are affecting our communities.
Faced with such challenges, what would you say you gained from the recently ended conference that you had in Washington?
I've gained a lot of knowledge in terms of therapeutic research, because now I have information to do with the benefits of starting antiretroviral therapy early, and that is one of the key challenges that we are having in Africa and Zimbabwe in particular. And research is pointing to the fact that people should start antiretroviral therapy despite of CD4 count. But you find that, you know, because of limited resources, people are on a waiting list for antiretroviral therapy, and some of them are dying while they wait for antiretroviral drugs. There's quite a lot of information that has come from this meeting.
And also at that conference, you were honored. What exactly were you honored for?
For playing a key role in the community. I do a lot of community mobilization with the University of Zimbabwe, University of California Collaborative Research Program. So I've been honored for the great work that I'm doing in trying to make sure research information gets to the grassroots.
What about the issue of stigma? What are you seeing on the ground?
We used to have a history of high stigma, but currently things are improving because people are getting access to updated information in terms of HIV. So the rate of stigma is declined, but we still advocate for people to accept people living with HIV more in our communities.
And in conclusion, what would you urge people to do? You have been working with people who are living with HIV/AIDS. What would you recommend people to do?
I recommend the Zimbabwean community to go for early HIV testing and early HIV treatment, because research is pointing that early treatment has multiple benefits, and it can avert problems to do with inflammation and immune activation.
That was AIDS activist Stanford Chimuti Munzeve speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
Young people out there, are you concerned about the many issues that affect you and Zimbabweans in general? Rise to the occasion. Make an impact. Let your voice be heard, and let's get talking on The Connection.
We cover a range of issues that affect young people.
I am Tatenda Gumbo.
And I'm Tungamili Nkomo.
And we are the hosts for your number one youth forum, The Connection. Join us tomorrow as we discuss plans by hashtag This Flag Movement, led by Pastor Ivan Mawarire, to stage another shutdown this Wednesday and Thursday. In your view, what will be the impact?
To get involved, send us a message with the hashtag TheConnection on WhatsApp. The number is 001-202-465-0318.
The government has failed to commit itself on payment dates for Zimbabwe civil servants after struggling to pay June salaries. According to Apex Council Chairperson Cecilia Alexander, government representatives who attended a crucial meeting on the issue and outstanding pay for some state workers requested for more time to consult on the July salary dates. Alexander tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri they've also demanded that the government should push forward the pay dates for the rest of the civil servants and pensioners who are yet to get June salaries and payouts.
There were mainly three areas that we discussed. First was the progress on the payment of June salaries. I think we are aware that the government has managed to pay the teachers and the health sector, but the rest of the civil service and the pensioners have not yet received the salaries. So government came with the same position that they will be able to pay them on the 14th, but as unions, we've demanded that the dates for their payment should be brought forward at least to tomorrow or the day after tomorrow. I mean the 12th or the 13th. And also for pensioners, we are saying they're a vulnerable group. They are now old and we should not take advantage of that.
What about the issue of July salaries? Did the government commit itself on this?
The expectations were high that we're going to receive July pay dates, but unfortunately, government has not brought dates to the meeting, and they've promised that by the end of the week, the dates will be out, and they are going to communicate with us accordingly.
In the event that the government fails to move forward the pay dates for the rest of the civil servants and the pensioners, are you going to do anything?
It will depend on what they're going to do, but I wouldn't want to preempt what we are also going to do. But we've made clear to them that these delays really create fertile soil for people to stay away, for people to say we are incapacitated to come to work. So we've really urged them that they pay as early as possible.
That was Apex Council Chairperson Cecilia Alexander on the phone from Harare with Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
In a related development, Zimbabwe Banking and Allied Workers Union today appealed to the Atlas Mara-owned Bank ABC board to reverse the bank management's decision to force retrenched workers to pay up their outstanding loans or have their properties attached. Ivan Chifera has the details from Harare.
Those are some of the retrenchees and Zibao members demonstrating outside the bank at its Mount Pleasant headquarters in Harare. The former Bank ABC workers, who were laid off following a Supreme Court ruling last year allowing employers to fire workers on 3 months' notice, said their retrenchment package was not enough and the bank had now deviated from the agreed offer of 1 month's salary for every year served. Instead, they said the bank paid 2 weeks' salary for every year served. As a result, the former workers said the retrenchment packages were far less than their loan obligations to the bank, thereby leaving them in huge debts. Paul Muzaza, a former bank employee, said some of them got as little as $1,000 when they had loans of more than $10,000.
Some of our members are not employed since then, and they are already facing lawsuits to that extent.
Zibao President Farai Katsande, who presented the workers' petition to the bank management, said the bank must reverse its decision and fairly compensate affected workers. He said the bank must stop demanding payment of the outstanding staff loans and attaching properties until a reasonable and fair retrenchment package is agreed.
You cannot be allowed to make huge profits by attaching properties of these poor workers by saving through paying exploitative retrenchment packages.
Katsande said Zibao and the affected workers would be picketing at the bank's headquarters every Monday until the bank reopens negotiations with the workers. The former bank workers are irked by the bank's failure to compensate them fairly when it's sponsoring football and donating money to youth empowerment. The bank sponsors the country's major soccer teams, Dynamos and Highlanders. Bank IBC Chief Executive Officer Joe Svanda could not be reached for comment. Bank IBC fired 75 workers following a Supreme Court ruling which allowed employers to fire workers by giving them a short notice to terminate their jobs. Labor unions say more than 20,000 workers have lost their jobs since the ruling. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
And in sports news, the Sables of Zimbabwe are in danger of missing out of the World Cup qualifiers for the first time in 36 years. Reporter Michael Cariati tells us why.
The Sables were over the weekend soundly beaten 61-15 by Kenya at Harare Sports Club, which has sent them bottom of the four-team Africa Cup Division 1A group. The Zimbabweans needed to win the home game to stay with a realistic chance of winning the Africa Cup as well as maintaining their position in the qualifiers for the 2019 World Cup, which begin mid next year. However, the humiliating defeat has put them in the relegation position and in danger of missing out of the World Cup qualifiers for the first time since 1980, as only the four teams in the Africa Cup in 2017 will play in the World Cup qualifiers. The Sables' next game is against Uganda at home, but their situation has not been made any good by the fact that they will play their last game against Namibia in Windhoek. Zimbabwe have not beaten Namibia over the past 10 years. While the Sables are trying to figure out what hit them, Dynamos are celebrating their fifth win in 5 games after a 2-0 win over Stubborn Border Strikers, so they move to fourth on the league table. Dynamos coach Lloyd Mtasa admitted that Border Strikers were difficult opponents.
It's another win, and without conceding a goal as well. I think we've gone three matches without conceding a goal, which is okay for us, and two goals again is good for us going forward.
Border Strikers coach Neva Malunga said football is all about winning and losing, noting that it was unfortunate that after giving it their all, they still lost the game.
Sometimes we lose, sometimes we win, sometimes we draw. But it was unfortunate today. We played a very good first half, but come second half, I think my boys lost concentration.
Border Strikers are bottom of the table with 6 points. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Thanks, Michael. That's it for tonight.
I'm